Hello, and welcome to Cage Club. Two fans, 87 movies, one cage. This is episode 92, The Humanity Bureau, from 2018. I'm Mike Manzi.
And I'm Joey Lewandowski, and with us today to celebrate this movie that has been out in the UK for roughly a year now, believe it or not, it is how do I want to intro you? She is a longtime Cage Club guest, but one of our newest hosts, co-host of the Winona Forever podcast, is Lindsay Gibb. Hello, Lindsay.
Hi.
Also Cage author. Gotta throw that in there. National treasure. Nicolas Cage. The cutest and best little purple book that I own. So thank you for joining us for this movie that literally, like, it's been floating around sites where you can download movies that you really shouldn't download movies from for almost a year, like a full year. I think it was like June or something that we were able to sort of, if we wanted to taste the forbidden fruit, we could have. But finally,
we've had access to it, but we have not opened that box yet. We have waited.
But finally, this past Friday, as we're recording this, April 6th, it came out on VOD, came out on iTunes in America. So here we are, watching a movie that belongs in the Sci-Fi Network, The Humanity Bureau. So now, I do want to say right off the top of the bat that there is one single person on Letterboxd who has given this movie 5 stars, and that person is my co-host, Mr. Mike Manzi.
You're welcome.
Yes.
Did I beat you to it? I mean, what are you...
Oh, no, I gave it 3. Three is generous. This is a bad movie.
Oh, I'm not denying that whatsoever. Like, it's slow, it's senseless, it's dull, but for some reason, I loved it. Maybe it's because it's been sitting there within my sights for over a year, and I've just been waiting to watch it. Because, I mean, I've ordered movies from the UK for my region free player, and I've done that a lot. Other countries and stuff, and things have out of print. So, I mean, legally, you know, could have watched it. You know, from the minute I turned it on, I was just delighted. I mean, that's all I can say about it. Like, I just love how hard it tried and how miserably it failed. But for me, I was having a great time watching it. So I had to give it what I felt was its proper due.
So I gave it 3 stars for 3 reasons. I gave 1 star for each reason. Number one, new Nicolas Cage movie. Number two, Nicolas Cage revives a boy in this movie by slapping him on the back so hard that he comes back from the dead. And number three, a guy who is Cage's boss tapes a piece of bread over his eye after his eye is shot out of his head with a BB gun.
Or did he do... We don't know that he taped that there. I have the feeling that Cage put that there and when they tied him up and left him like that. But nevertheless, yes, a great moment.
It is crazy. Lindsay, what did you think of it? I saw what rating you gave it. You gave it right around where I did. I feel like it's probably also a little generous just because it's a new Nicolas Cage movie. What do you think of this movie?
So I gave it 2.5. Yeah, I was very surprised to see that Mike gave it 5.
And I bumped it up from 4, actually, too.
I saw that you did it at 4, and then when I went to log it today, I was like, what is going on?
But I mean, it's sort of in the realm for me, Joey, of like inconceivable for you. You know what I'm saying? Where, I mean, I fully understand that this is a 1-star film, but, you know, in my realm of entertainment, I mean, especially being one of these made for sci-fi type of films, I just had to.
I think my 2.5 is really for the end. I felt satisfied with the ending.
When Cage gets shot in the head?
Yes.
Like, super abruptly?
I mean, even when she, like, the woman in the movie gets shot in the head, we were like, whoa, we didn't expect that. And then Cage gets shot in the head, and you're like, well, this is really going somewhere. But yeah, otherwise, it was very boring.
Yep.
Not much was happening. Like, the premise of it was interesting to me, and so I felt like maybe this is going to go somewhere. So that kind of kept me with it, aside from the fact that I had to watch it for this, and because it's a Cage movie, so I will watch everything that he's in, but yeah.
Let me read the opening crawl.
Which is one of my stars, so as long as we're explaining our ratings.
Okay. Oh, right.
Yeah. Right off the bat, this amazing prologue.
I think it's 2030, though. Yeah. I'm not sure. Yes.
Oh, it's way too soon in the future. Like, this, that is incredibly bad call for the creators.
In the near future, after economic catastrophe and climate change came famine, the Great Migration and the Civil War. Society collapsed. Manufacturing and industrial production of food and goods ceased. America built walls around itself and its cities. The government gave sweeping powers to a single agency, whose task was to assess and separate those citizens who were deemed a burden to the system. That agency was known as the Humanity Bureau.
12 years from now.
Yeah.
It took 10 years to rebuild anything at Ground Zero. Like, nothing gets done in this country. Like, there's no way. We went through a civil war and a famine and, like,
yeah,
civil unrest. This isn't, like, that's the movie. Where's that?
And it's all supposed to be, like, a fallout from global warming, I think. But that's not even, like, I don't know how, like, where in the timeline does that,
yeah.
And, like, it's also, like, the current timeline, because that guy in the beginning, who Cage shoots and kills, said he was, like, he went to the White House and he has a picture of him and Trump. It's like, what is happening?
Well, he was a governor, and he, in that picture of him and Trump, he is much younger, and he's, like, an old man, so
like
it was not just
younger?
12 years. No, way younger than 12 years, I think. So, yeah, that's a problem. In continuity, I guess.
I mean, this movie is, like, filled with misinformation. I don't know if that's one of the themes of the film, because it's the society that's been erected after, you know, all of this, the Second Civil War. They don't even call it the Second Civil War or Civil War II, which I was... Anyway, yeah, I don't know. It was going for, like, way too much. I'll just say that on the bet. And gets way nothing done. Like, it ends up becoming, like, a weird, like, sort of... drama instead of what I was expecting to be an action movie.
Considering that the Japanese title is Human Hunter.
Another star for me.
Interesting.
But that's not what it is at all.
No.
That's not even a little bit.
No. Yeah, like, the idea is that he works for this bureau that assesses your, like, how much you contribute to society. And if you don't contribute anything to society, and there basically is no society left to contribute to either, which they don't talk about. But if you are deemed sort of unfit, you are sent to New Eden, which is just like this relocation place that you could, like, have a new life and get a new job, and they'll hook you up.
However,
big surprise,
there,
super twist.
Nobody hears from you again.
Was anyone shocked by the super twist that it's a concentration camp? I mean,
it is bananas.
Yeah, not really. So, I mean, in some ways, Human Hunter, if you think of Hugh Dillon as the main character of the film, then that maybe that's accurate.
Well, yeah, because
he's
hunting.
Basically hunting people.
He's hunting Cage, right?
Yeah. And then maybe there is a society to contribute to, because doesn't Nicolas Cage drive outside of the, like, walls?
So he starts the movie by, like, driving outside the walls.
Of,
like,
New
that
America.
Wall comes down next to him and just like, hey, we can't protect you anymore. He's like, good, I'm outside the walls
oh,
now.
Yeah, this is super drone heavy, this movie. So you know it's the future.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, though. It's like the Hunger Games or something, where there's, like, the Capitol, apparently, where the Humanity Bureau resides. And to me, I love that it looked like it was shot as a community college or something, like, doubled for the Humanity Bureau. I thought that was charming. But that's about all that exists in this city. And then the rest of the movie at least takes place sort of on the fringe of all that, like, outside, because they're on the run for the rest of the movie. So we don't even see them, like, go to New Vegas or New Seattle or any of that kind of stuff, which would have been cool. They're mostly hiding in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
They just run across, like, this movie, I...
Okay.
Obviously, it's a very cheap movie to make, but...
Yeah.
At times, it sort of pulls off, like, it's low budget as high budget well, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, wait, no, I haven't seen any other people aside from these three in the last, like, 20 minutes. Like, there's just no extras. And then they go to a place like, hey, there's a creepy guy with a crutch. Like, he's just here. And that's, like, the only person that they'll talk to for, like, 20 minutes.
I thought the movie started pretty strong, like, actually strong, establishing what's left of this world of outsiders and stuff. And then the guy's like, you want to buy some clean water? And I was like, oh, that's a pretty cool idea. But then Cage, like, looks at the water and he goes, selling clean water is a felony offense, mister. Like, I could have you locked up for that. It's like, how is selling clean water a felony?
Yeah.
And that's another half a star for me. It's like, this is nonsense, and I love it.
The confusion of that made you love it.
You know what I liked? And I don't know if you've seen this one, Lindsay. This is his most recent movie that we did, beside from this one. Have you seen Looking Glass yet, or no?
Yes.
Oh, yeah,
I saw Looking Glass. I reviewed it, yeah.
Yes.
It took me a minute. I was like, that's the one, right? Yes.
So I like that this movie essentially starts with him on the other side of the Looking Glass, that he goes to that motel, and instead of, like, behind the counter, he has to, like, shake down the guy behind the counter so they can get to the guy who, the former governor or whatever. But I just like the sort of, like, twist that we're now, I guess, in the motel phase of Nicolas Cage's career.
There you go.
Yeah, I wrote that down. That's as
his new theme.
It's a connection. That's definitely a Cage connection.
Motel.
There. Is cradling a dead bird in your hands a Cage connection anywhere? Because that was a brilliant scene. So if I could just set this up quick. Like, I won't spoil the twist yet, I guess, but like, he goes to, you know, investigate this single mother.
Yep.
What, she like lives in a farmhouse with her son who has, something's up with this kid. Like,
well, you also know, I mean, you don't know exactly what's up with it, but
no.
Before he walks in, he's looking at old-timey pictures of a woman and a kid. And you're like, who's this? Is it his wife and his kid? Like, who are these people? And then he goes in to talk to the single mother.
Yeah, and I don't know if you guys are wearing your comfortable shoes, but this kid's shoes were not comfortable, and that's like a major, that was like a huge thing for this kid, and not comfortable shoes. But anyway, like, at one point, while Cage is sort of doing paperwork and stuff, the kid's up on the roof trying to feed his bird in the chimney. That's when he falls off the roof and Cage sort of resuscitates him by slapping him on the back.
Yeah.
But yep. What I loved was that for the rest of the movie, like, the kid doesn't have a limp or a sling or any bruises.
Nothing.
Nothing. Like, it's perfectly, like, that's something, that's like the logic of this stuff is what I love.
It seemed like he just slept it off or something.
Right. Or Cage's like magical back slap cured everything. Like,
right.
The kid doesn't go without his maladies later, because they go near that like nuclear wasteland or whatever, and he's like, is my hair falling out yet? I'm like, he's so concerned.
Oh, yeah, and he gets
about his hair
nose.
Falling out.
Yeah, and he gets a bloody nose, and I was like, oh, is that from the radiation? And he's like, oh, I get bloody noses sometimes. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah. Yep.
You're just going to drop...
That kid is a terrible actor. He is real bad.
Yeah, he wasn't great.
Yeah.
So this movie's Canadian, so I think that's why I picked it.
Okay.
To be on this episode. So that's also a thing that makes me wonder why it took so long for me to be able to see it. If it's been out in the UK for a year, I'm in Canada. Why can't I see this Canadian
movie?
But anyway, I looked up this kid to see if he was Canadian, because there was something about the way he talked that made me think he was Canadian, but I don't think he is.
Really?
It didn't really say on IMDb where he's from.
He's just got a really stilted delivery.
Oh, no, he is from British Columbia.
There you go.
He's born in British Columbia, but he's been in a lot of American things.
There's that one time where he's like, next stop, Jackfish Lake, and he totally says Jacquefish Lake. I'm like, okay, like, you sleeping. So, Joey, I think we get the youngest depiction of a Cage character in this movie, where we have, like...
Probably.
Micro little, like, toddler Cage, and he's doing the fishing off the edge of the pier in the flashbacks.
And then we also get, like, slightly older Cage when he's, like, swimming in the water after he's dead at the end.
Oh, that's right.
We get a couple different young Cages here, yeah.
What did you guys feel about how, I don't know, like the, what was the guy? The bad guy's like assistant or something? He was my favorite character. The black guy? Oh my God.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah.
Like totally playing this the wrong way. You know what I mean? Like he's clearly in like the satire comedy version of this, and everyone else
yes.
is in the very serious down to earth trying to pull this off version of this, but I don't know. I just appreciated what he was bringing to this whole thing. He's so out of place.
I agree. I thought him and Hugh Dillon had some great moments that were really funny.
And he almost survives, too. Like, that was great.
Yeah.
Almost survives.
Almost. So one thing I didn't get, and I have to say, I was watching this, but maybe I wasn't paying close enough attention to get everything, because I don't remember the bird cradling part, so I must have looked away.
The bird cradling thing was that the kid is holding a bird for some reason,
uh-huh.
and the bird's nest is up in the chimney, at the
yeah.
top of the
right.
chimney.
Right, I saw him yeah. climb up there.
That's why he falls off the roof. Right.
He's holding right. the bird, he falls off, I guess he squishes the bird when he falls.
Right.
And then after Cage revives him, he's just like thinking about life while holding the bird.
Yes, I saw the reviving and the falling off the roof, but I must have looked away during the cradling. But there's a part where Hugh Dillon is talking to his sidekick guy, who's named Agent Porter, according to IMDb. And he says, we're on the wrong side of history. But then they don't change anything about the way they're acting. Like, they still go after Nicolas Cage and...
That was sort of towards the end, I think, too,
yeah.
right? Yeah, where you expect him to have that turn and let him get away or sacrifice himself or something. But no, he ends up going even further by...
Yeah.
Yeah, when he shoots that girl in the head, I was like, whoa, like, what what just happened? Like, from 0 to 60.
So I think now is probably a good time to discuss the twist of
right.
the movie.
Yes.
Is that the Rachel that we see is not the real Rachel. What happened to the real Rachel?
Okay.
She died?
Yeah.
She tried to sell the kid, right? Like, she wanted to sell the kid for money, and
right.
Then, so this girl takes the kid and is like, I'll raise him on the farm, and the mom just, like, takes off, I think. We never hear from her again, or she dies.
And that is Cage's former wife or someone, and the kid that he's been with is his actual kid.
So the new Rachel, who I think they say is named Amanda in actuality, she said to Cage that the real Rachel tried to sell him, and then she didn't think that was a good idea, so they fought, and there was an accident.
Yeah.
So that indicates that Rachel died.
Okay.
I
love that. Okay, half a star. Nice. Backstory. Should have remembered that or written it down.
But as dumb as this twist is, I kind of appreciate the fact that, like, when Cage confronts not Rachel about it and is like, hey, who are you? Because you're not the Rachel that I know. This is my kid. All this different stuff. The movie's sort of, in a way, smart enough to be like, well, we can't tell the kid that I'm the dad, because then we can't say that, like, why wouldn't I know you? Because, like, you said right. you're his mom.
Yeah.
So, like, right. as dumb as the twist is, it kind of makes sense that they don't actually reveal to the kid. Like,
yeah. mm-hmm.
it's smart about its dumbness.
Yeah, I thought there were some interesting parts of the weird twists.
Yeah, for me, the illogical thing was the twist in the first place. And then that day, you know, I was like, all right, that's weird. Like, he was acting like he didn't recognize this kid or have any kind of relationship to him at all. But I suppose in retrospect, when he shows up at the concert, sort of like a dad in the back watching.
Right.
Yeah, like, I just felt like the twist in general was the weird thing. But you're right, like, it's so funny how they stick to that and make it work for the rest of the movie. Like, of all the things, you would think, like, at least the kid would find out that Cage was his dad at the very end.
I mean, if Cage had had more life, maybe he would have.
There you go.
But
what do you guys think about the whole rabbit's foot hiding, like, the secret microchip about the truth?
Well, all I know is that the hungry rabbit jumps.
I know. I was thinking that, too. It's a little Cage in action.
Did we see Cage give him the rabbit foot? I don't remember that.
Yeah,
he talks about it a lot.
He gives it to him as, like, I think they have a little exchange where, and this is, I guess, right before they're going to go on the run. So, like, he knows the truth about what New Eden is, and he's like, I got to save these people. And now it makes even more sense as to why he picked these specific people to try and save out of anyone, because it's, like, his kid. Right. He gives him this lucky rabbit's foot, and they just have, like, a little thing where the kid's like, what's this thing? You know? Like, I don't know anything. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm literally, like, unlearned here. And Cage is like, oh, it'll bring you luck. Later on, when they meet those, like, Mad Max kids and their dad,
yeah.
like, living up yep. in the trailers, he goes, where's the rabbit's foot? And the kid's like, oh, it's here in my pocket. He's like, always keep that with you, whatever you do. I was like, oh, okay. There's something up with that
Very
rabbit's
important.
Foot.
Because, I, like you, Lindsay, as what I'm gathering, I also missed large chunks of this movie. Not large chunks of this movie, but like frequent small chunks of this movie, because I was like,
right.
oh my God.
Yeah.
But there was a point where he is talking to his mom and is like, hey, look, it's good luck. And she says, well, not good luck for the rabbit. And
oh,
he's like,
wow.
I guess that's right. And then at the end, the rabbit's foot is what has the flash drive on it, where
right.
Cage confesses to the fact that New Eden is a concentration camp, and that this is going to, I guess, bring down the downfall of, like, this government, but, like,
of America.
Who's left to, like, take it down?
The Canadians, it seemed.
Yeah, exactly, the Mounties.
I felt like it was a very heavy-handed Canadian movie, like, America's basically a big concentration camp, and Canada's going to save everybody.
A.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, one thing I was thinking way too much about after this movie was, I'm sure the rest of the world's, like, perfectly fine, and that America has just isolated itself and told its citizens just heaps of lies after the Second Civil War, you know? I mean, clearly the wrong side won that war. I don't know, instead of the North and the South, if it was the East versus the West, or how it went down, or any of that kind of stuff, but...
I I feel like it's still probably the North versus South. If this is following current reality, like, I'm pretty sure it's still North versus South.
There's a German guy they meet along the way, and he said that he ended up in America because he came there on vacation and it didn't turn out well. So that does sort of lead you to think that maybe, yeah, the rest of the world is very different from this.
But doesn't it also just made me wonder, like, how... Well, that guy, I understand how that guy survived, because he took to the mountains and, you know, he's sort of, like, up there roughing it. But it makes me wonder how that senator dude earlier from the motel, like, how did he survive famine, riots, and the Second Civil War and all this shit? Like, it makes you wonder about the people who are left.
Yeah.
This doesn't feel like a society that would be left after all of that. Like, I just feel like way too much happened before this movie. They should have narrowed that down a little bit.
People aren't Mad Max enough. Like, more of the people should have been like that, maybe.
Yeah, or at least, I don't know, they almost felt like they wanted to go a little, like, Brave New World, where it was like, oh, the metropolis city and everyone is conformed and they're fine, but then you get further out and you get, like, the savages and stuff and the cannibals or whatever out there, but they never go that far. It's a very, very small-scale movie.
Yeah.
There was one point I wrote down, I'm like, oh, I haven't taken notes in a really, really long time.
Yeah, me neither.
Like, there's things that are happening, but they're not really of any consequence. Like, people are meeting people and you're sort of learning a little bit about the world or, like, a little bit about who these people are.
You know what this is exactly is just, like, a very low-rent version of Logan. It's just this guy trying to get this kid across the border and he's going to die along the way and he's, you know, it's just not going to be, you know, it's just not as good. Like, there's just I'm just not as attached. I'm more attached to Cage, I guess, you know, and then than the character, but I don't know. That's sort of what I was getting at when I was watching this. It's like, wow, there's a lot of parallels. I wrote down a lot of notes if you want me to just go off, like, a couple random ones. One thing I thought was just, like, completely useless were the hologram phones. Why, you know, is it just easier to sort of tap the air than to just tap the screen in the future? And where are the resources for that technology?
I feel like that was very much just a way to tell us this is in the future. Other than the words right at the beginning, in the not too distant future or whatever it said.
In the near future.
Near future, right. I'm thinking Mystery Science Theater.
That was a constant, that's like a constant reminder too throughout the movie. It's like, oh yeah, he's doing work on his little iPhone, hologram phone thing.
Yeah,
going on.
His car is talking to him, whatever,
I loved how he whips out, because he knows, like, the Humanity Bureau, like, will just, like, send you back in a box of ashes. So, like, he whips out his coffee. He's like, I've been saving this coffee for a special occasion. And she's like, what is that? He's like, yeah, it's super rare. I'm like, dude, it's not that far in the future. But anyway, how are you going to make this coffee if there's no clean water? Like, you can, what is going, like, what are your thought processes at this moment? Like, I really enjoyed that. I liked how the little kid shot the dude's eye out with the BB gun, and then he had to wear an eye patch the rest of the movie.
Did he have an eye in his pocket later that the kid stole?
He stole his glass eye that he never wore.
Why did he have a glass eye? Like, did he just go fetch a glass eye and keep it in his pocket for later? I didn't understand that. It made me question whether he always had a glass eye and it just got knocked out when the TV went in his eye. But then I was like, I have no idea.
It needed the moment where he was, like, trying it on in the mirror and it just wasn't, like, working for him or something. And so he puts it in his pocket.
Yeah.
I liked when that guy was swimming in the pool, too. And it was like, oh, water's so fucking rare and I'm swimming in a pool. And they make, like, that really tasteless joke where he's like, you want to, because his assistant's black, so he's like, you want to take a dip? And he's like, I'd probably drown. I was like, oh, what's that about? Like, I don't know if that was necessary, but I don't know if that was intentional or maybe because it seemed like a play on two things. The fact that the guy didn't grow up with water, but also that it could have been a racist joke. It made me hate the guy double time because he was wasting water and being an asshole, so I guess it works as a scene.
I enjoyed when Hugh Dillon was looking at the feed from the military drone, the one that saw Nicolas Cage and the team in the car, like, that they hid themselves in the bushes or whatever. And then he was like, zoom in. And then they're like, we can't. And they're like, this is... just, we're looking at the military speed. We have no control over it. And he's like, don't they understand how important this is? And he's like, it totally doesn't matter to them. I just thought that was very realistic and funny.
During that sequence, they're hiding out. They're driving through Montana. So shout out to Tobin. fellow Cage Club
there you go.
Contributor yeah. from mm-hmm. Montana. I thought that was pretty funny anytime that shows up. This whole, like, world, or at least, like, America is supposed to be, like, a desert, barren wasteland. And there's a moment where the kid's complaining about his shoes again. And she's like, if you don't stop complaining about those shoes or something, like, you're going to be walking in the snow barefoot. I'm like, what do you mean the snow? There's snow? Like, I thought it was, you know, a barren wasteland. But I guess... just another one of those lies that the government tells you.
I was so looking forward to this movie. Like, I didn't think it was going to be great, but, like, we waited so long for it, and I feel like we're not even 30 minutes in, and I'm already, like, out of things to talk about because, like, nothing happens in this movie.
Yeah, that's fairly true. I don't know. Should we talk about the ending where Indigenous Canadians find the kid and then take him in and watch the... video, and then there's like a riot or something, and it's the revolution.
It's just this whole timeline is an accelerated,
like, yeah,
yeah, like sense of time. Yeah, they spark a revolution like immediately. Like, it's amazing. I love it, and I love that, like, television is broadcasting everything still too, like every corner of this ruined world.
And isn't Cage sort of, like, obviously he's the instigator of the revolution because he's the one who left that video behind explaining what was happening in the States, but he also, in the video, he says, like, something about it's time for the revolution, yes. or whatever. And then all the videos of, yeah,
it's like a fire. Manifesto, like, at one point, yeah. He's like, I don't remember his character's name as much as I love this movie, but he sits down and is like, I'm from the Humanity Bureau, and, like, here's the truth about New Eden. And, like, America's lying to you. Viva la revolution! Like,
right.
Take to the streets! Like, take back your country.
I feel like toward the end of the movie, like, in general, both in that video, but also just right before he gets shot, he's really kind of amping up the intensity, but I feel like that was just sort of tacked on. Like, there's the one thing when, after Not Rachel gets shot in the head, and then the kid is there with him, and he's, like, yelling at the kid to go run away, he, like, sort of does one of the classic Cage freakouts, and I'm like, I feel like they're just adding that in because he's been so sort of, like, kind of relatively neutral for the whole movie, that between, like, that scene and then this video, it's like, they're just saving all of his enthusiasm for, like, the last, like, 6 minutes of the movie, and I don't know
right.
why.
So that he's the hero, I guess. I don't...
Yeah. He gives a very low-key Cage performance throughout, even when shit hits the fan. Like, I feel like he's too calm under pressure. Like, I feel like he should have, like, burst through the door and be like, grab your shit, we're going. And the kid's... And then, because there's one time where he's like, come on, let's go, we're going. And the kid's like, what about my books? And he's like, take one. Like, mm-hmm. We only have time for one. I'm like, you should be, like screaming and grabbing shit and, like, packing for him and, like, freaking out more. And I guess there's none of that. It's much more of a low-key performance this time around.
Do you think that we're getting used to all of these hyper-intensity Nicolas Cages, like, in Mom and Dad and stuff, that we can't appreciate Good Guy Cage anymore?
No, I'm okay with... Like, I like Good Guy Cage because, I mean, Mike and I have used this as an example in a bunch of movies recently. But, like, his smaller part in Snowden, I thought, was, like, really good.
Yeah, so did I.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
Like, I would love to have more of that. Or, you know, there was news this week in some interview, I think, with JoeBlow.com or whatever, that Cage thinks he would be a good Joker in a Batman movie, which, of course, gave him the Joker, absolutely. But when Mike and I did the Cage Club Podcast Network recast of the Batman universe, we think he'd be a great Commissioner Gordon. Like, he'd be so good. It's like this dignified, sort of
seen
older guy who's, like, seen it all.
Right. Like, he's been in Gotham. He's, like, knows every corner of it. That would be really cool. Yeah, I really like these types of his performances. I just don't know if it was appropriate 100% for this movie, but I think there's still nice moments for him in this. Like, you know, I like his look. I always like when he's sort of all decked out in black and he's got, like, the Elvis haircut a little bit, and he's got a bit of, like, that snarl when he talks. I feel like he's channeling a little of that with the sideburns and stuff, but I don't know. Yeah, he's playing it way more cool. I like it. I just don't know if it's appropriate entirely for the urgency of what his character's going through at times.
Right.
One thing I really like, though, as I think more about this, is just, like, when Cage is a dad, I know Joey and I love that a lot, too.
Yep.
And this isn't exactly like, I mean, he is this kid's father. The kid doesn't know it, but there are some moments where, like, there's Family Guy moments. I even think at one point the girl says, what do you want to be, a family man? And I was like, oh.
Yeah, I didn't even notice that, but yeah.
I'm telling you guys, extra star.
References. This is how we got to 5 stars.
I think we're at like 4 stars right now.
Yeah, we got to find the 5th.
My quick mental math has been about right.
Right.
All right.
I noticed on IMDb that one of the taglines for this was, "Yes, Obamacare."
What?
I don't understand. I cannot wrap my brain around what that tagline means.
The only trivia on IMDb, speaking of IMDb, is that this is Nicolas Cage's first sci-fi movie since Knowing. That's the only trivia.
Yeah.
Really?
About this movie.
Interesting.
Yeah. He's like, I like sci-fi, so like, I want to see him do more sci-fi, clearly. I mean, you know, it's not all I want to see him do. I'm just convinced I'm never going to see him as a cowboy, so I'm just going to... I feel like the moment I stop dreaming, it's going to happen, so I might as well just... Sooner the better.
So that was another thing that, like, in another interview, or maybe it was the same interview, Cage was also talking about Ghost Rider, and he was saying how he really wanted, like, he wants, like, a hard R Ghost Rider, like a crazy Ghost Rider, but he doesn't want to play Ghost Rider anymore. I want him to be, like, the Sam Elliott, like, in a continued universe. Like, he's the older, you know, the wizened Ghost Rider who has to go on, like, one final ride to help, and they can sort of, like, ride off into the sunset. Like, do that. Like, that could be sort of, like, a cowboyish kind of thing.
Yeah. I'm really going to throw my, I guess, my nerd card down and pull out a deep cut, but, like, they've been talking about doing a Lobo movie for DC's universe, and he's just, like, this crazy intergalactic bounty hunter who's just, like, a biker dude, and it's, like, kind of, you know, it's got the aesthetic of Ghost Rider, but he's got, like, a bad attitude about everything, so I don't know. Maybe Cage could, like, do that? I could see that? I don't know. But it's along the same lines. And that would be heavy R-rated. It would be like, you know, he'd be out being the bounty hunter. He's sort of like a Boba Fettish type of guy.
Huh. I'm down for whatever. I mean, we have we have another, potentially, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6... maybe another 8 movies coming out this year. So, like,
yeah, guys, that's right. I don't think we mentioned on air, but like, we're 4 months deep and we've got 3 new Cage films. And technically, this came out in virtual reality last month. So, like, he had 3
movies.
Which I
can't imagine how boring that would be. We didn't even talk about that, but like, what is there to see in virtual reality here?
This came out in virtual reality.
Yeah, in America, that was like its first. That's the way it was distributed originally. I guess some company acquired it, some distribution company, and they need that content for VR because it's just this fresh new platform that whatever you can put it out on. But I don't know. Yeah, it doesn't have that immersive feel. I mean, you could just kind of go stand out like in the woods for a half hour and then go stand in a desert for a half hour and something. You pretty much got the experience. And go sit in a car, in the backseat of a car.
Oh, Cage does do some solid old-timey driving where he's like oversteering in what's a very clearly a not a moving car, miming sort of going down like a bumpy road. I did appreciate that.
Every time they were in the car, and I don't know if it's because I was watching it on my laptop, but it just looked like the most CGI. And I was like, why when they're in the car? I guess it's because the landscape had to be different, but I don't know. It just looked so weird.
Who can say?
Like, there's
really who can say.
Yeah, it seems to come down to like a production value meets sort of like, I don't know quite how to do this any other way kind of thing where, yeah, it could have been done much better practically. It's obvious green screen stuff, but I love that, I guess, about it. It's like, it's so obvious, and they probably shot all of the car stuff in one, you know, big chunk or something. Joey, did you catch Cage Nexion? He sleeps in a car. Like, that's a very, I feel like we got that in Red Rock West, where he wakes up in a car on the side of a
car.
Like, in this one, he wakes up in a car. I'll go sleep in the car. You could just picture him saying that. You have this huge two-story farmhouse with a barn in the back, but I'm going to go sleep in the car. My El Camino.
I'm trying to find out how much this movie cost, and I can't find it. Made $0 at the box office, so did not go to theaters.
Yeah, it wasn't in theaters, right?
RogerEbert.com gave it 1 star and calls it a low-budget science fiction thriller.
I think they said it got a very limited release, you know, sort of the way Mom and Dad was playing in, like, one theater an hour from here. I think a friend of mine in L.A. said it was playing out there, so it's not like at your multiplexes or anything like that. It's nowhere near me this time.
I think my favorite thing about this movie was Hugh Dillon, and that was kind of the reason I wanted to watch it too, like, other than the fact that it was Canadian, I think Hugh Dillon was the thing that attracted me to it. And when I keep saying his name, do you guys recognize him from anything?
No.
Okay.
I looked up everybody in this movie and I don't know anybody from anything.
I'll tell you this much about him though. I feel like that eye patch was very very becoming for him. Like, I enjoyed that turn for his character. So he wore that well, and I thought he did a really good job in this movie too. So
I know him really well because he's Canadian and he's in some major Canadian movies like Hardcore Logo. But he was also a musician in Canada. So the song that plays over the end credits is his song.
Oh, interesting.
He was in The Headstones. Yeah, so it was a Headstones song. I'm looking at his IMDb, and he was in the new Twin Peaks.
Yeah, and he was in The Expanse, which I watch and love. So that's a cool show. And Wind River he was in. I think the more I'm looking at
him. Oh, right, yes.
I'm starting to recognize him a little more.
The mom was in The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford.
No,
and I was like,
shit.
Oh, who is she? And she's like last credited on a letterbox. She's like Bob's girlfriend or something.
Okay.
I was like, oh, I've just never seen her anything.
It wasn't a speaking role. Like,
no.
I mean, no offense to
not
this.
With a name like that, Bob's girlfriend.
Like, I also just didn't really, I mean, I felt like she was shifting in and out of an accent, too, like, kind of like the kid. Like, I feel like she couldn't really maintain if she was trying to pull off a new America accent. Sorry, like, this takes place in New America. Or yeah. Right on the outskirts. I kind of felt like her accent slipping from time to time as well. So I was like, well, at least like that. I was like, well, they're not biologically related, but if they were, their accents would sort of, I guess, match. I don't know.
That like the kid learns how to talk his garbage language from his mom.
Yeah. I also thought it was kind of weird that they still sang the old Pledge of Allegiance.
Like, oh, so yeah, so that was weird. So like when the kid's doing the Pledge of Allegiance and then like Cage enters the auditorium and the kid pauses because he's like, oh, I see Cage is here. I was expecting him to come back and like, instead of saying like Under God or whatever, like some kind of like really crazy modernized twist on it, but no, it just straight up the classic Pledge of Allegiance.
And that seems like it should be illegal at this point to recite that, right? Like it should be the new Pledge of Allegiance of some kind.
I mean, if they were being moved to that Eden or whatever it was called, New Eden, if they were being moved there, like I feel like, was this a completely illegal community that they were in? So maybe that's why it was like everybody was so proud he was saying the Pledge of Allegiance, because it was like we're the rebel, I don't know, community.
Wait, Lindsay, do you know the Pledge of Allegiance?
I mean, I know of it.
I mean, she has no reason to need to know it.
I know that, but
I've heard it in movies and stuff, so...
Like this movie?
Yeah, like this movie. Oh, are you asking me if I could recite it?
Try it. Go ahead.
Oh, God. That's terrible. Okay, what is it? Like, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and something about the Republic?
And
to the Republic for which it stands?
Yep.
Is that when indivisible comes
nope,
in?
One.
Or am I jumping ahead? One nation. Indivisible, yeah.
It's a controversial clause in the Pledge of Allegiance.
It's the what? Oh, it's the is it under God?
Yeah. Yep. One nation under God, and then
indivisible.
Yep.
Okay, but then I don't remember
with
justice.
No.
What? Say it. Liberty.
Yep. With liberty and justice for all.
There we go. So you know.
You did pretty well.
Yeah, pretty good.
I still think they should have came up with a new one for this movie. Like, I pledge allegiance to the Humanity Bureau and the ovens at New Eden. Something like that. I don't know. Something dark and evil, and then these little kids are singing it, and you're like, oh, I'm feeling it. But
nope.
I was feeling Cage there, though. Like, watching, I was like, this is so weird. Before you find out he's the dad, like, why are you helping these people? What is going on? Like, it's not like you're the type of person who would be like, I have to save the next two people I meet. Like, you're
right.
Living this life of luxury as a Humanity Bureau agent, one of like four maybe in the whole country. I don't know. It's very hard to tell how many.
And he's also on the verge of a promotion too. Like, he's not only an agent, he's like a good at his job agent.
And he just killed the last person
right.
He's trying to take in. So yeah,
he saved them room at New Eden. He's like, way to shoot that guy right in the head so there was no chance that he could survive.
Ridiculous.
Just doing my job.
That must have been the Humanity Bureau's way of shooting people, because everybody who was killed by a Humanity Bureau person in this was like shot right in the middle of the forehead.
True.
Oh, that's very true. Yeah. And they couldn't really fight for shit either. Like, they have that one kitchen fight that lasts like a minute because they're just like so winded.
Oh, where not Rachel like picks up the submachine gun and like, because she's a girl and can't hold a gun, like sprays the entire ceiling with all the bullets. Do you remember that?
That was so weird. Like, also her son was in the room. Like, why would you just pick up a gun and shoot it randomly everywhere?
This movie is so pro-gun, it's not even funny. Like, the kid comes up and is like, hey, can I see your gun? And Cage, like, hands it over.
Gives it to him.
Here you go. It's a Glock. Get used to it, kid. And then later, the kid's with, like, the Mad Max kids. And he's like, you know, it's not a Glock, but he's, like, holding a fucking, like, machine gun. And he's like, this is my Glock, whatever. Like, it loads it. And the kid's like, have you ever killed anyone? And he's like, no, but I will if I have to. It's like, holy shit.
I don't know guns at all, but I thought he came in the room and, like, said what kind of gun it was. Like, he listed something that was, like, a complicated name. And I was like, whoa, why would he know everything about this gun? But maybe he got it wrong. I don't know.
Oh, boy. I don't know. Lindsay, do you have any other notes about the Humanity Bureau before we wrap up and we can sort of talk about your new podcast a little bit?
No, I think I named off everything that I wanted to say.
There is, apparently, you know, Cage is trying to fish. He's like just like flinging that fishing line around in Hugh Dillon's office and like sticks it into a Monet. And they're like, oh, like look how little societal value has anymore because like we're just able to trash these like classic art. Super cool movie.
Okay. I thought this was really strange. Like, you don't just, I don't know, this was really weird. But at one point, the kid's like complaining how bad he has to go to the bathroom. And I'm like, why don't they just let the kid like take a leak outside the car behind a tree or something?
Yeah.
But it turns out he's got to drop a deuce. Like, this kid goes into like the grungiest bathroom on earth and just like sits down, super cash, just like dropping a deuce time, no problem. Like,
didn't he have a magazine too when he went in there?
Yeah, it was probably a gun magazine, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, God.
I guess that's when the guy comes in and like gets him. But I just thought that was bizarre. And they were like, where is he? And she's like, well, you know, he gets. Like, I'm not going to, like, wipe his... She doesn't say this, but she's basically like, I'm not going to wipe his ass for him. You know, like, he's going to the bathroom. He could take care of himself. But Cage is worried because it's his son. So he's like, oh, gotta find him. And there's, like, a super fast chase, like, out of that little complex or whatever they were, the industrial zone. But, like, yeah, I just like how everything exciting happens in, like, two-second bursts and then it's over.
Yeah, it's a little weird in that way. It's like, hey, we need to have an action scene here, but we can't afford it. So, like, how do we condense what should be, like, a four-minute scene into, like, 30 seconds? Well, like, it just, you know, they get away.
Yeah, this movie is a bizarre contradiction and, like, super doesn't follow, like, any logic whatsoever. Like, one other thing, last thing, I guess, because there's just so many things. Like, I'm just going to go rewatch this movie soon. But one thing is just like, you know, he drives an El Camino and it's like, okay, cool, because he's the cool bureau guy at the bureau. But like, everyone's driving cars that are old. So you're like, okay, what's going on here? Like, lack of resource. But then there's stuff like the hologram phone where you're like, clearly new things aren't being made. Why aren't they making new cars and weapons for the Humanity Bureau if it's so important? So I just loved how the movie couldn't get itself straight like that at times. And
well, I feel like that's probably budgetary. Like let's have a cool car. Like, we don't have to make like a concept car or something. You know what I mean? Like, we can just have like a, oh, it's cool. And like, look at the back. There's like a, we have like some ones and zeros and like this, you know, serial number or whatever.
But it's like the weird shorthand, though. Like, on the one hand, they want to say it's futuristic, look at, like, the tech. And then on the other hand, they're like, it's futuristic because it's retro. Like, it's retrograde. Sure. So it's like, wants both, but, like, can't execute either properly.
Oh, I absolutely get it. And Mike, whatever you say, we are not watching this movie on Saturday when we record some Cage Clubs Revisited. We are not coming. Revisiting this
one. It's too soon.
That soon.
No, that's okay.
Well, so as we tease at the top of the podcast, Lindsay has her own podcast now coming out every other Wednesday. So the next one, this will come out, you know, sometime this week. So the next one will be next week. It's a Winona Ryder podcast, Winona Forever. She and her friend Rekha Tulsarim, right? Is that how you pronounce it? So what's the next movie that you guys are doing?
The next one is Heathers.
Oh, wow.
I know, getting into the big time.
The fact that Beetlejuice was 3 and Heathers was 5 was like, it's crazy.
I know. Yeah, there's a lot of big ones coming up, I think. But yeah, there's super huge ones right off the top.
Well, that's cool. You will be back on later this year, hopefully for this year, for Teen Titans Go to the Movies, where Nicolas Cage finally gets to be Superman, so that's exciting. And then you and Rekka will both be on our other show that's sort of in hibernation, Keanu Club, when Winona comes back into the world of Keanu for Destination Wedding. We finished Keanu
that's
Club.
That's exciting.
When did we finish Keanu Club, Mike? September, October-ish?
It's
and like,
been a while, yeah.
No movies have come out. Nothing has come
it's
out.
Weird.
What is he doing?
What is up? And he was supposed to have that one movie where he built his family as robots because or something.
Replicas.
It was at Comic-Con last year and it's still not out. It's weird. I just hope it doesn't stay on the shelf as long as this movie did, because we were denied this for far too long, folks.
Which is totally fine. You do not have to go see this movie.
See, Joey, well, you're handling it much better, like, when you don't like a movie than I unfortunately exploded and, you know, taking my apology tour across...
Oh, the Waking Up in Reno apology tour crosses over to Cage Club.
Crosses over
this.
To Cage Club. If you're listening to this, yeah, I just have to say once again, my behavior on that episode was out of bounds. That doesn't represent me. That just is a fluke, I feel. Everyone could have a bad day. Mine was captured on tape.
Well, I realized while watching this that, like, this is exactly made for you, because this is, it's like sort of like the, because I know you love pretty much all things sci-fi. You're okay with, like, low budget. You're okay. You love dystopian stuff. I mean, The Bad Batch, I was like, this is like The Bad Batch, like, cheap, that doesn't look good and also doesn't have an interesting story. Like, it's just like,
what
it's,
if you get
it's
deported
sort of in
there?
That world, but not quite.
Yeah, like Cage takes you to the border and drops you off with the Bad Batches. Like, there is a movie.
Yep.
Yeah, no, you're right. It, you know, this one just pushed my buttons much more, and yeah, but no, Waking Up in Reno, I was unfair. Totally deserves a second look, so check out that movie.
This Saturday on Cage Club Revisited, we are going back to Reno for Waking Up in Reno. Just kidding, we're not gonna do that. But thank you so much, Lindsay, for being on. Check out her podcast every other Wednesday, Winona Forever. And come back later this year when Lindsay's on with Teen Titans Go to the Movies. And also, if you want to plug your book, you can buy it on Amazon and ECW Press, right?
Yes, you can.
There you go.
National
buy it. It's adorable
treasure.
And great. I always call it adorable, and I don't want that to sound condescending. I love
it's
the style
small.
Of those books. Like, the little books, like, they're just so cool.
Yeah, it's a little book.
It's a little book.
That's
but it's
fair.
Filled with heart.
And information.
So for all things Cage Club, including Lindsay's past episodes, you can go to cageclub.me or facebook.com/cageclub or at cageclubpod on Twitter. You can find all 17 of our podcasts now. You know, like we said, you know, Cage Club and Keanu Club are both in hibernation, but Mike and I on a weekly basis are going through Charlize Theron's movies for Watch the Throne. We are also each doing our own projects. Mike has his Third Time's a Charm once a month, every month on the third. And then I've got a whole track of, like, you know, hunky beefcake movies with me and Joe too for Channing Tatum and Ryan Gosling, the Fast and Furious movies. So no matter what you like, go to cageclub.me, find the show that works for you. We've got a few more launching this summer. As some things end, others begin. So keep coming back. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Say hello. Email us mailbag@cageclub.me. We will read it on air next time we do an episode. Maybe Mandy, maybe not Mandy. I don't know what the next one's going to be. Let's play a game. What movie do you think is going to be the next Cage Club movie we do?
I need to get into his...
So here are the options. There's number... I don't know what any of them are, really.
Yeah.
But there's number 211, Mandy, Red Squad, Between Worlds, Xander, Primal, A Score to Settle, and Teen Titans Go to the Movies. So I'm going to take Mandy. I think that's in theaters maybe in May. So I'm guessing we can maybe do an episode like in August. But there's still a lot of time between now and August for another thing to come out.
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb and I'm going to say something we haven't even heard of yet.
Whoa, okay.
Maybe like a Secret Cage film or something that just hasn't been, that's going to fall between the cracks or something. I don't know. I think we might get a surprise.
Cool. I'm into that.
Did you guys do Looking Glass?
We did Looking Glass, yes.
Okay.
We both loved it.
Peeping Cage.
Interesting.
Well, not like loved it, but like we're entertained by it a lot. Like, it was the kind of entertainment that, like, I was sort of hoping for here and just didn't really get here.
That's fair.
And it's not here, Joey. Like, I'm gonna, you know, I'll say that again. Like, it's not really here at all. Like, you have to be of a certain mindset here.
Well, I really hope the next movie is Mandy, because I'm dying to see it.
Me
so
too.
I want it to come out.
So no matter what the next movie is, you can find it at cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, and at cageclubpod on Twitter. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And that was Lindsay Gibb, and we'll see you next time on Cage Club.